Welcome to AUP Radio, a melting pot of voices and ideas. This evening we have The Breakdown, Let's Talk About God, and 15 Minutes of Fame. For any students listening, don't forget, tomorrow AUP is hosting an open day at 6 Rue du Colonel Combes in the 7th arrondissement of Paris from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And so if you would like to join, just see aup.edu/openday and sign up. Now here's the show.
RP Radio listeners, this is Kathleen Sharp, host of The Breakdown, a weekly show about the top journalism students produced by our students at ASM Media at the American University of Paris. I am joined today by the lovely Stella Richman. Hi, Stella.
Hi, guys. What's up?
And we know each other actually from doing student journalism together. And Stella's a big fan of radio and podcasts.
I'm very excited to be here.
And so we're going to go through the top stories of the week together and talk about them.
Yeah.
All these stories can be found at peacockplume.fr, where I've written and where I think, Stella, you've probably written there.
Not yet. No, I've never written there, but I've read some great pieces there.
Yeah. So that's peacockplume.fr for any of you radio listeners interested in reading along. So the first piece that we're going to talk about is called Are You Prepared for the December Strikes? And it's by Drew Barnes. And Drew is talking about these upcoming RATP, which is the Paris metro and bus line and tram line services, and their impending strike on December 5th, which is kind of be like Parisian doomsday.
Yeah. I'm not even sure which lines are going to be shut. All of them?
All of them, except I think that maybe the automated lines could be open, like they were on the first strike.
What are the automated lines?
September 13th. So those ones are the line 1 and 14.
Wow. So what does that mean? Everyone has to walk or take an Uber?
Yeah.
Or like a line?
Exactly. So in the article, Drew talks about how... basically, the strike is unlimited for right now. That's what they call it, illimité, which means that we don't know when it's going to end. It's going to end when the RATP decides it will, or when they get what they want from the French government.
So it could be months.
It could be, but I think they'll probably reach a settlement.
It's crazy that they can even just do that. That, like, it basically shuts down an entire city.
Yeah, and it kind of does impede people from going to their own places of work.
Well,
you know?
Yeah.
The reason that they're doing it is because of the changes in the French pensions system, and they currently get their pension at 62, but the French government wants to lift it to the age of 64, push it back 2 years later. So I can kind of see where their aggravation might be coming from, but I think that that's not even going to apply to any of them, but maybe the people who are coming in after them.
So, like, the younger people. So is it the younger people that are more upset, or the older?
No, like the people who aren't even working there yet, I think.
Oh, wow.
But I may be mistaken, but from what I understand, it's a lot of frustration with the French government for the different changes they want to implement.
Yeah. Kind of like Gilets Jaunes.
Yeah.
All over again.
Yeah. But I mean, just as probably, like, economically.
Yeah. But also disrupting, like, every Saturday, like these past Saturdays for what, a year now? All the lines are shut, or most of the lines are shut.
Different stops are shut. So it affects
getting places. And now this is permanent. Well, not permanent, but like every single day.
Yeah.
Not being able to get to where.
And I mean, the timing of the strikes, I think, is strategic too, because it's right near the holiday season. You know, it's going to be during like peak tourism times. And so,
I feel bad for everyone that bought tickets for Christmas to come here.
Well, hopefully they're going to have like close to Center Paris. Like,
yeah, I'm sure they'll take a lot of Ubers around. Yeah, is Uber going to be? Have surge
expensive.
Pricing.
Surge pricing the whole time, I'm sure.
That's crazy. Dang.
Yeah, so you live right near school. I live right near school.
I have no problem. But a lot of people are moving their flights early
to go home for the holidays.
And different teachers have made their exams like canceled their exams or made them earlier.
Or made them like send take home tests to email to them later. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
The next story that we have today is Shoppers Want Experiences, Not Just Products. And this is by Liza Cameron, who is a, I think, opinion. She has a lot of opinion pieces on the website. Mm-hmm. And again, you can find this story at peacockplume.fr if you want to read along. But she talks about how consumers and shoppers are not so much interested in just, you know, the functionality of a product, but getting behind what the brand itself stands for. Mm-hmm. So like going into a store and feeling the vibe of the store and seeing if you like the people who are working behind the counter and if you like the story behind the products, like if it's
sustainable,
if it's cruelty-free,
right?
All of that.
Interesting. I haven't like heard a lot of people talking about that.
Yeah.
Recent. But definitely like sustainability has been a conversation. I think that's come up. But what I found difficult with buying sustainable, like from sustainable fashion brands, for example, Reformation, very expensive prices. Clothing.
Yeah.
I want to buy sustainable clothing, but I can't afford like a 300 euro dress.
Mm.
So.
And I think that's where like people. But I think the reason that even despite those prices being high, Reformation has this like cult following is because of the brand image that they have built up around it. And that's what this piece gets into. It's like talking about how, you know, consumers are interested in the shopping experience. So like they go into the boutique, they feel like they're treated well.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to just
like the aesthetic.
Click on a button online and get it. They want to go in and be like, okay, I can have it now. I can hold it now. I can feel like glitzy and glammy like in store. You know, like nobody... I mean, maybe there are people who do, but I think most people, for example, who are buying like a Chanel bag or
it's the experience.
Something like that. It's the experience of going into the store, being treated like you're special, and then coming away with the box and the pretty bag and the
Definitely. I feel like that's how I feel like going thrift shopping. Like I feel like that's me going in, finding like it's the experience. You find
your
thing.
Feel special.
You feel like you're doing a good thing. Like sustainable. It's not sustainable.
It is sustainable.
Yeah, it's literally sustainable.
It's totally sustainable.
And then you find a piece that it's like a whole experience.
Yeah, and you have to worry about where it was before.
Exactly.
You.
Yeah. You feel like you're special.
Thrifting in itself is like experiential shopping.
Right.
And and I think that's something that people are kind of going to be nostalgic for, especially with like e-commerce. People are like, you know, like how after vinyls and CDs kind of went away,
they came back
because
style.
People are nostalgic for them. They want like that tactile experience.
Yeah.
Just like I think that people don't want to just shop online. They want to have it like in front of them. That's why I don't think that malls, even though malls are kind of dying across America, I don't think they'll ever completely go out.
Yeah, I don't think. I think there's still diehard people that are going to go there. Like, I think it's the same for books. Like, I think there's always going to be some bookstores, even though like big brand bookstores are going out.
Yeah.
As well.
And with the ebooks and there's just
Kindles,
like Amazon.
Yeah. And the audiobooks, I think there's still people that will buy.
Hardcover books.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I feel that way. I would do that too.
Sometimes I wonder though, I look at some books and I'm like, only a library will buy you.
Right. Okay, that's true. I know libraries. Amazing.
Amazing.
I love libraries.
So let's talk about the next article. Okay. So there's this other article, which is called Will a Likeless Instagram Really Make a Difference? Also on peacockplume.fr. And it's by Lauren Tosbath. And she is describing this thing on Instagram where it's a feature
this
that
is a really
they're
good
test
topic.
Driving.
Yeah.
And they're taking away different likes.
They're
like,
taking away likes on people's photos. On only some people's, though.
Yeah, it's only like guinea pig
exactly.
mode right
but,
now.
But, you know, they had done that before in, like, Canada, in Australia, I think, that they previously didn't have likes. And now they're bringing it to America.
Yeah, so all you can see is, like, liked by and then a friend in common.
Right.
And others. And then if you click on the and others, you can see some of the people who've liked the picture.
Yeah.
But from my understanding, like, unless it's your own post,
you can see
you
your
don't
own
know
likes.
The number of people who have liked it.
Right. Which is good. I think it's good for people not comparing themselves or valuing their self-worth to likes.
Yeah, and but I think when you're seeing the number of likes on your own post anyways, you will still feel crummy.
Yeah.
It just won't be, like, an outward
It's for people that don't care about that care more about what other people think of them, you know? Okay. Like, I feel like people compare themselves to other people's
and
likes.
And the number of likes
that they yeah. get. I think people are going to be posting more things posting things that they wouldn't post before, because I hear people all the time say, I would post this if I...
But it would get any likes.
Yeah, I don't think this would get any likes, but so I'm not going to post this. I think people would start posting more.
And more like aesthetic pictures or like...
Yeah, less like, people... I think less of themselves, because, you know, posts that are of yourself get the most likes.
Yeah,
I think everyone knows that.
Because people feel like they're like cheering you on.
Exactly. People like seeing, I think, faces.
I think so too. I like seeing my friends' faces. And also it makes it a little bit more easy to like... When it's somebody that you like, you're like, oh, I'll give them a like,
exactly.
you know?
But if they post
Whereas
like
sometimes
a building,
if it's somebody that you're following that you're just kind of feeling like, about, you might feel like,
but
not liking
can
it.
Can you talk about...
But if they posted like an aesthetic picture, you might like it without realizing
exactly.
it's them.
Yeah, no, exactly. Can we talk about how Instagram, though, is playing it like they're trying to like do good for the world, for everyone's self-esteem, but I really think that it's because they want all advertisers to come to them instead of going to influencers.
Yeah, so it's within their platform.
It's within their platform, because influencers now don't have a bigger, like, if they don't have likes, and you can't see how much
and the
how many people are seeing it.
Aren't beholden to Instagram, like they can pay outside of them, like as a
exactly.
third party.
So they have an ulterior motive that I don't think people are aware of.
No, I agree.
The dark side of Instagram.
And I think that a lot of it comes down to business model, even if what they're saying
right.
is that it's about mental health and blah, blah, blah. I think maybe they have mixed like intentions.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
think
I
that
do
it's
think
probably
that's part
for
of it.
A little... of both.
But I truly don't think Instagram cares that much.
How altruistic could they really be?
Yeah, no, they don't. That is a
They're
good part.
They're owned by Facebook, right? Facebook is known for literally not caring.
No, they don't care. They're trying to make money. That's period. But
and it's so profitable, especially amongst like millennials and Gen Zs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Instagram is the most used or most frequently checked on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah,
like
totally.
App amongst.
And it's crazy how much money influencers make on Instagram. It's insane.
Yeah, I think just, like the top people can get $1 million just per
Kim
post.
Kardashian.
Per post that someone
That's
sponsors
crazy.
Them by. Yeah. Kind of makes me want to like pay an influencer $1 million just to promote me so that I can become an influencer to get that money back.
I wonder if that would work.
Should we try
I guess,
it?
Yeah, let's,
we
let's
it?
Round
we
a
just,
million
like,
euros.
We'll round up €1 million.
A small loan.
Actually, yeah, a loan
a
from the bank.
Euros. And
a
then do
loan.
That and then gain no followers.
And then, then have to pay back the loan.
Yeah, yeah, with nothing.
Okay, we could buy, why don't we take out a loan to promote WRP and the American University of Paris's radio show.
I love that idea.
And we can just, you know, use it as a plug for our show.
Yeah, exactly.
So what if you suddenly had no likes and you couldn't tell how many likes you had gotten either?
Yeah.
How would you feel?
I think it's really good. I think that I definitely feel that, like, I want to post just kind of random stuff sometimes, but I get really anxious about like
other people seeing
like the
number.
Amount of people that are gonna see it, and then if people are gonna like it or not, then other people seeing how many, like, I don't like to admit it because I want to be like, oh, I don't care like what other people think, but like I think that's a big part of what Instagram is. So I think it's great, honestly. And I feel like, why should people care?
I think that's part of like the growing thing with Finstas, you know?
Exactly.
Finstas, for those who don't know, it's your fake Instagram, and that's where like you just have your close
your
friends
real
following
self.
You,
and you post whatever
and
you want.
It's like goofy.
Exactly.
You know?
Why isn't everyone's Instagram their Finsta? Is my question.
That's a real question.
Because
and
I
maybe
have
without
thousands
the
of people
of, like,
following.
Well, sometimes people post super personal, like intense things on their Finstas, but
that's a whole nother
I think,
thing.
Yeah,
that's a whole
story. Another
that could be another podcast
tangent. But
yeah, I mean,
I think that the like list feature though could be good, and who knows, maybe they're doing research, collecting research on it right now to see if it actually does make an impact.
Well, I wonder if they're gonna make. Because due to the fact that there's only some people that this is happening to, if at some point there'll be no likes all over in every country.
Yeah, maybe.
On every person's Instagram.
Because right now we're in France, and U.S. friends, I think, have that happening to them.
But I think some people in France don't have, like...
Either. Okay, with French iTunes. I wonder if it's by your iTunes store or if it's by your geographical location.
That's a good question.
But whatever it is, I still have likes.
I have likes too, but I actually want them to leave. I'm jealous of those that don't have likes.
Maybe they should make it an option where you can turn it, toggle it on. Oh, wait, yeah, you could still do that. Toggle it on or off. Like,
interesting.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Stella, for joining
me
today.
I'd love to come back.
I would love to have you back. This show is every Friday night and at the same time. And again, all of these articles that we talked about today made by our student journalists are on the peacockplume.fr, peacockplume.fr. And that is, again, the student media, student journalism, student run website.
Yeah.
And... this is The Breakdown. My name is Kathleen Sharp, and have a wonderful weekend, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Hello. Welcome back to the Let's Talk About God show. It's a show where we discuss freely and openly about God or spirituality, for that matter. It could be any conception of God or even a non-conception of God. So whether you believe in God, don't believe in God, or have any form of God that you ascribe to.
Yes, I am Jill, returning as a co-host to Let's Talk About God, and we have a...
And this is Bear, as usual.
Yes.
Sorry. And then we have Imani on the show today. Imani, hello. How are you?
Glad to be here. Happy to be here with you guys.
Heck yeah.
Let's get started.
So, Imani, since this is your first time on the show, we're going to have you...
I feel like the Virgin Mary.
We're going to have you give a little background as to what you believe and why you believe it. Mm-hmm. And like so I guess let's start off with, what did you grow up in? What beliefs did you grow up in?
So, I'm originally born in Boulder, Colorado, but my mother is from the Congo and my father is from Gabon. So they have a mix of their like ethnicities, but with Christian background. My mom is a born again Christian and my dad is Catholic. But a funny thing about my dad, he rarely ever goes to church. I mean, we've been for large holidays like Thanksgiving or like Christmas or Easter, but he doesn't really, in his words, he thinks the Catholic Church is a little bit too procedural, and also he sees a lot of hypocrisy in it. He just does it more of a family tradition, you know, social place of to gather with family,
community
and absolutely. But my mom is, she's extremely spiritual. She goes to church every Sunday and she does like, you know, events during the week.
But she's not Catholic. So
no.
Which denomination?
She's like more like a Jehovah's Witness.
Okay.
Of, like born again Christian. That's what the name of the church is. Like, so.
Okay. Jehovah's Witness and born again Christian are two pretty different things though.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know exactly, you know, she'll just say that she's a born again Christian. It's not like Baptist or anything, but they have a lot of intertwining principles and constitutions the way that they've done it.
Okay.
So I think she's got her own interpretation. Her own community of churchgoers who have their own interpretation, sort of a hybrid of things.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
But me personally, I fall more in the lines of, I'm spiritual, but because going to church became so familiar to me from my mother, I go every like other Sunday there's a Pentecostal church near my place, maybe like, I don't know, like 5-minute walk. And then there's the one that you took me to, La Cité, that I've been to once, and thinking about going again because I had a great time.
Awesome.
Yeah, really. Yeah, but I think my spirituality is constantly developing, especially because when we started the club together, I and I was thinking it was going to be more of like a theological, like debating kind of club, but it's really evolved into just people kind of sharing their stories and experiences with church. And
yeah, it's something that I should add and clarify, which I did not do, is that Imani is the VP to the Let's Talk About God club here at AUP. And so we started that club together. Maybe we can get into that a little bit later, but yeah, continue on.
If you've just joined us, this is Let's Talk About God on AEP Radio, brought to you by WRP. It's 9:20.
Yeah, but it's constantly developing. My personal relationship with the Lord. Because I believe in Jesus Christ, and I believe that He died on the cross for our sins. But I think what moves me towards Christianity the most is the metaphor or of the sacrament of His love was so strong and so powerful that He was willing to carry all the sins of men on His shoulders and die for that. And I think that's such a, it's very poetic and beautiful, and it really helps me when I'm feeling alone sometimes and thinking that there's something out there, being out there that loves me unconditionally with all my faults and flaws. It's a very comforting feeling. It's a very, it's just a comforting feeling. Yeah, and that's what brings me to Christianity and that kind of spirituality is the,
awesome.
Yeah, kind of cool. Completing, like wholeness. Yeah.
I think that's a huge draw for a lot of people. And yeah, just the fact that I think that it's cool that Jesus died on the cross, and He did it to, He says that He needs to go away so that He may advocate for us to the Father, and so that the Holy Spirit may come. And it's like the Holy Spirit is there so that we will never be alone. But yeah, so let's actually get into, why did we start the club?
Well, it's a funny story, actually, because my mom had sent me some of those, like, spam emails with a Hebrew verse or I think it was, like, Hebrews, like, 11, 16 or something like that. I think I have it here, actually. I kept it so to show you. And I sent it out to, like, everyone on Facebook just because I was just feeling, like, just motivated to do it. I sent it all out, and then you responded back with another verse. I don't know, remember which one, but I can.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I saw that, and I was like, "Oh, there's like another Christian at AUP," yeah, which is not a very common thing, unless they're out there and I just haven't met them yet. But it's a pretty small school, so
it's really hard to miss out on people who, like, you know, if they're fellow believers, it'd be hard to, like, miss them.
So, yeah, but that's also kind of the point of this show and the club too, is to get people to start talking about this stuff. But yeah, so continue on. You sent that out to me, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. And we both realized that there was sort of a void of spiritual talk or a spiritual dialogue between students. And we thought it would just be, I mean, like, why not? You know, like, let's fill that gap. And I think we've done a really good job of it. I think actually, as the club evolves, I'd like some people from different denominations to come through. I mean, we've had some Jewish people and a lot of us different sects of Christian believers or people who were going to, like, Christian, like, a Sunday school type stuff, but, like, never really committed to it.
Or, like, fell away from it. And that could be, Jill's example.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. <That's me. laughs> what denomination were you again?
Methodist.
Yeah. Okay. I really don't know much about Methodist, but...
They like their methods.
They like their methods. Yes. Okay.
That's all you need to know.
Okay.
Scientific.
But yeah, so she sent that out, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then later on, we met up before the beginning of this semester, and, well, we didn't really meet up. We just kind of ended up falling into a conversation about how a lot of the time I end up in conversations with people just about God and what they believe in, because it's just so much fun to me.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's super fun. And especially here at AUP, where it's such a diverse group of people, it's like how many different views and beliefs are out there. And so we were just like, well, we should probably do something about this. We'd probably just get people talking a bit more, because everybody, mm-hmm. whenever they do talk about it, they seem to enjoy it as long as it's in a comfortable setting.
You know? We've had plenty of people, like, after leaving, just been like, this was fun. What's the next one?
Yeah. So, can confirm.
Yeah, because you keep coming back.
Yes.
She wants to.
Yeah, what's so great about it, I mean, it's you guys have managed to stray from this, like, Sunday school atmosphere, like reading Bible verses, which is only really reachable to a Christian audience, and broaden the conversation to everyone, which is great, because everyone... Well, most people have some sort of feelings about the subject. A lot of them are negatively charged when we bring in organized religion. Right. But I think, you know, honestly, kind of similar to the way that political parties separate and do not engage with each other at all, especially in the United States with the, you know, the polarization of the Democratic and Republican parties. It's this, that there's no dialogue is actually really harmful for the whole cause, because nothing gets done. And, like, these groups are separated and cemented as opposed to any sort of collaboration.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely an overarching issue. And when people don't open themselves up for another person's point of view or another person's belief system, we just get further and further apart, and the discrepancies between, you know, rich or poor, black and white, they become larger.
Believer, non-believer.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so it's pretty cool that the gaps are being bridged in some form here at AUP.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Coming into it being, at least, I mean, you're not necessarily neutral. It's hard to be necessarily neutral, but you are a two within the group. So you're more neutral than either ones or threes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what was your perspective on that?
Why I came in?
Or, like, what was your perspective, especially in the first meeting, just seeing the banter? It wasn't really argumentative, but seeing the banter from the threes and the one side. I mean, I thought there were some really good points said.
Yeah, definitely. I thought there were some good points made by the atheists in the room. It was nice to hear from them. I was frankly shocked that so many of those folks came out and, like, wanted to join the conversation. I think it's great to have all sides represented.
Especially to a club called Let's Talk About God.
Yeah, like. Exactly. Exactly. I think, you know, that speaks to the community at AUP, who's actually willing to, you know, acknowledge one another and dip their toes into the situation. But my impression of the first meeting was really positive and was an inclusive space, and I felt comfortable to, like, bring up things that I had been thinking about.
People got personal.
Yeah.
I mean, there was this blend of, you know, anecdotal experience, which is super important, right? It, like, makes it personal, but then it was also blended with, you know, philosophical undertones, like the burden of proof. I remember is something I brought up, like, in that first meeting. And, you know, to have those perspectives informed by a range of perspectives, I guess, was nice to see.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, I was a little overwhelmed the first meeting, because there were so many people, and I was so surprised, like, how many. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, we had in twos. I mean, it was the smallest of the group, but I was seeing in ones in the threes. I was like, wow, this is gonna be an actual thing. Like, you know, these people are, like, charged up and they're passionate and they're, like, ready to discuss how they feel about spirituality, but not in a way that is, like, poking fun of, or, like, we had a lot of laughs, which is, I remember.
Yeah, it was just like, it was a great time. There was actually one of the atheists, dude named Jake. He came away from it and he said that it was one of his one of the best group discussions he's ever been a part of. And honestly, I would agree. It was super, super interesting, and it was, like, it was comical at all levels. We could all just be, like, freely ourselves. And I think that just going back to what we were saying earlier about, like, the, if there was separation, we just can't talk about this stuff, then it's like we can't necessarily have fun, you know, like, understanding each other. But I think that it's cool because we're seeing a way where we actually can have a great time understanding each other. And I hope that I mean, we'll see what happens, but I think it'd be cool to somehow bring that into a different sphere, you know, mm-hmm. and bring it out of AUP in some form.
Yeah. I'm just out of curiosity. I'm wondering, have you guys ever seen anyone like get kind of heated, emotionally charged, like in one of your meetings? Like,
not yet.
No. No. Not in one of my meetings, but I remember one time in First Bridge, one of my First Bridge teachers, Linda, and another kid, I think he was Muslim, but I don't remember his name, they were having a very charged debate because she was more on the side of like atheist, non-believer, and she was making a lot of good points, and he was just like, well, no, like that's divine, like knowledge, that's divine, like, you know, that's the order of things. And so I've only seen that once, and it really does separate people when it becomes a shooting game more than like ping pong, you know,
just yeah.
What do you think it was that made the atmosphere so comfortable and for people to like, to both of you, I mean, what do you think it was that really helped people to open up a bit?
I mean, you framed it in a way that was inclusive, you know, it was like, let's have a discussion that's for the purpose of having an interesting discussion. And it's not about defending anyone's honor. It's about collaboration. Mm. And, you know, I've seen it time and time again when that preface is not instated and things like what happened in your class start to happen where people's pride gets so thrown in the mix. And then there's this defensiveness and then it you know, gets to be more about being right than exchanging rhetoric with one another.
Yeah. I like that. I think that pride is such a huge thing in this. It's like you have to really do away with your pride to not get hurt by what somebody else says. Because I mean,
and sometimes you're really just justifying your lifestyle.
Yeah,
it has a lot to do with, you know, your everyday practices, like how you go about your day, how you interact with people, and when someone comes and challenges that, it's so uncomfortable that I think it can be almost, you can feel a sort of nakedness, and in that nakedness you're trying to cover yourself up with you know, hateful words or hateful that, but this was a sort of nudity that was, you know, on display. Everyone was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah.
A nice nudity. Hey, we're all nude together.
let's talk about God might take on a new meaning if we're not kidding.
Yeah, I swear we weren't all nude, we were fully clothed.
Just to clarify. I'm interested, as you know, a two in the middle, about you folks who are much more oriented towards the belief in God, right? Do people shame you for being a Christian
here at AUP?
Or just, I mean, not necessarily at AUP, but like in your life, have you ever, you know, experience some sort of like not being included or whatever?
I came to AUP being agnostic, and I was agnostic for my first 2 years here, and then I became a Christian again for essentially the last 2 years. I mean, I still have a half a year left to go, but I've definitely noticed changes in my relationships. Not necessarily negative, but, and nobody's outwardly attacked me except for one girl who thought that I was a total liar, which wasn't the most fun thing. But it was just more of a drifting away. It was more of a, yeah, we just didn't really see eye to eye. We didn't really do the same things we used to do together. And I just didn't hold the same values or really even want to partake in certain things that they were doing. And so obviously, like, it was such a radical transformation. And I became entirely sober as well. So with such a radical transformation, things are bound to change.
Yeah.
But people are very inclusive. They are very accepting. And I think they realize too that I'm still me. You know, I don't do certain things anymore, but I'm still me, and we can still have a good time.
Yeah.
So, but that's definitely been one of the bigger changes. My friend groups have definitely changed.
I see. So it's kind of like the behavioral changes after, you know, becoming a Christian, like how what you decided to do with your time kind of reinformed you know, who you choose to spend your time around.
Yeah. And in the beginning too, is like, I mean, I still go to parties and such like that. I just don't partake in any of the things that go on at parties. I mean, except for conversation. I always end up falling into a conversation about God because there's many people that want to talk about it.
Isn't that funny?
It's really funny.
Like everyone's like, yes, yeah. I want to talk about it.
We were talking with with Marley.
I always end up falling into a conversation with this one guy, Marley. And
he's a philosophy guy.
It's
should
really
bring
fun.
Him on.
I should totally do that.
That'd be rad.
Yeah, that'd be super cool. We fall into really awesome discussions. He's got a cool background too. So if he comes on, I'm not going to give any spoilers because if he comes on, he can give his own background. Mm. But I mean, I still go to parties and such, and I still I have good conversations. That hasn't necessarily changed. I mean, before when I would partake in substances and such like that at parties, I'd just fall into different conversations. Yeah. I'd have different ways of expressing myself, you know? I mean, things have changed, but not necessarily. I haven't felt excluded or nobody's really bashed me for it. Hmm. What's your experience, Amani?
I think a little bit similar. I mean, as long as I don't go around wearing West Baptist Church rocks on my t-shirt or anything, I won't get any hate or shame or anything. But the thing is, I think hate begets hate regardless of what organization that you're with. If you're speaking hatefully, you're going to get hateful speech back. Mm. Personally, in my relationship with God and with the Christian church, I've always struggled back and forth, but I've still maintained that sort of core belief in the love of God and his unconditional love. But I think that's what people relate to, is that I'm not some sort of, I feel like Bear would be more of the poster boy for and I'm just more I'm here struggling too, but I'm still trying to make it and and find that sort of balance, you know. And I think people can relate to the sort of not always knowing, but at the same time feeling a pull to it. And so when I've had conversations with people, I'm always like, yeah, I understand your point of view. I actually thought that myself. And then this is, I'll give an anecdote or testimony if this is a reason why. And even if they don't come to the same conclusion, they're saying, I see your point of view now, because I see that that's the personal experience that you've had.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's as real for you as mine. So.
Well, both of you are clearly interested in talking about this with people and not imposing your belief system. And I think that that is the key to having productive conversations. I mean, the reason I asked is just because not so much at AUP, I guess, but more broadly speaking, in today's society, there's a bit of almost a stigma projected onto believers and you know,
we're not smart,
people who follow God. Yeah, because totally. Of this whole antithesis between religion and science.
Yeah.
Right.
That's huge over here, especially in this secular country that we're currently residing in, France.
Yes.
It's massive. And I think it's funny, just being the position that I'm in too, is I'm a philosophy major, and being a Christian philosophy major is not necessarily a common thing.
Right.
I mean, the church has been consistently pretty pitted against philosophy. Not consistently, it's been more of a recent thing, actually. I know that David likes to say that the majority of philosophers have had a problem with God, but I would say the opposite, that the majority of philosophers in the past have actually had at least some form of belief in God. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean they're always Christian, but I think that it's definitely interesting, because what usually happens at parties, and what happens a lot of the time, is I'm having to explain what I believe and why I believe it. And so it's actually developed a really cool, strong philosophical basis in a lot of things that I do believe. I think that there are some things, though, that are hard to explain, such as miracles or prophecies. And then
prophetic dreams.
Yeah, prophetic dreams. And that's usually when I get into just testimonials, just because my friends trust me and they know that I wouldn't be just outwardly lying to them about these things that I've seen and experienced and that have happened to me. But in regard to the majority of the other things that aren't supernatural per se. Mm-hmm. I've definitely developed a pretty strong philosophical basis for them, and I think it makes sense. It makes a lot more sense to me than what I used to believe in. But again, it's what I believe in now. So,
yeah. I'd just like to add, I've been taking this comms class called Museum as Medium. I've been learning a lot about the history of churches. And there's actually this great one at Saint-Denis. Take line 13 if you want to go. It's like right when you reach the metro. And a lot of it is about just like also maintaining a legacy, a history. Like, you know, you look at the, you know, glass ceilings and all that stuff, and they're actually trying to portray a sort of like a human experience and then make it kind of like conical, like make it sacred.
If you're just tuning in, this is Let's Talk About God on AUP Radio, brought to you by WRP. It's 9:40.
So I think there's a lot of historical value outside of just like, you know, being a really prominent believer in any one denomination. I think there's a lot to be learned about human history.
Well, yeah, because the church has been such a
huge influence.
It's beyond part of life for many years. So, and I mean, that's why, like, you have to learn about theology to a certain extent if you're going to learn about history. Like, the two are just intertwined.
Mm. Yeah, totally. And I think that another thing that I would like to add in about being a Christian within the state of things, especially because back home in California, where I'm from specifically, there are a lot more Christians. There's a lot more people that will believe in what you believe. But there's also a lot more miracles.
Really?
Yeah. The stories here are really, really wild. But I mean, it kind of makes sense when there's more people who believe in one thing, that there's going to be more. I guess, I don't know. It's something we can get into later.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, is there a different volume of miracles happening, or is that people realize it?
I think maybe people realize it more. Like, they see coincidences, as one person would call it, more.
I see.
Or they're more noticeable, but also there are just straight up more healings. There's straight up more prophecies. There's people coming up to other people being like, hey, I feel like I was supposed to tell you this, and that person prayed for exactly that the night before. Huh. And I hear about that stuff happening all the time back home. It's actually crazy. But over here, having to defend what I believe and such like that, I think that it's interesting because being in the secular state that we are in, there are a lot of preconceived beliefs, which are, it's funny because oftentimes religious people are, especially today, are noted to be the dogmatic ones. But I think that within a secular society, it's so easy to be just as dogmatic, if not more so, about certain other things that have become prominent beliefs in days like today, and certain modes of actions or things of things that are okay, things that are not okay. And so I really think that and what I really love doing is challenging people on what they actually believe and why do they think that what they believe in is so accurate, even though religion is labeled to be the thing that is actually entirely inaccurate, but even though I've actually seen a lot more accuracy within a lot of things that I believe compared to what I see constantly and in current today's current society.
I gotcha. Do you have to be Christian for a miracle to happen to you?
I wouldn't say so. No. Definitely not. I've heard of stories where, a lot of the times miracles have happened to people and then they end up becoming a Christian. It says that signs and wonders follow those who believe. And, a lot of the time that's how we see a lot of people becoming Christians. I have some missionary friends out in Kuwait and currently some family friends out there. And the wife, Natalie is her name. She prayed for one woman about, cause this woman had a huge phobia of rats and so big to the point that if she even thought of a rat, she would have, emotional breakdown. Like she would have, an anxiety attack essentially. And so she prayed for her, and talked to her about what the Lord can do. and she, that phobia was lifted off instantly, and she even felt like a tingling on her back, and she actually felt lighter. And right after the prayer, and she, and then Natalie had her imagine a rat, and she could do it, and it's just like, it was no big deal anymore, which she hasn't been able to do for the past 20 years. And she's been looking for so many different ways to figure out how to get rid of this phobia. And that was the first thing that has actually worked. So mm-hmm. I think it's interesting because miracles can happen to people. And one of the things that I've heard from a very prominent Christian named Todd White, he says, people are like, well, I don't believe that can happen. He's like, it's okay, I do. You know? And so I think it's funny because miracles, they go against confirmation bias. They go against like, oh, if you believe in something like, I don't know, common New Age notions of like manifesting something, it's like, you don't have to be the one manifesting it because it can actually just happen to you. And so it's objective.
Yeah, I think the pastor Steve Furnick said that too. And there's another one. I think he's more of like very well known, actually, and he does those sort of infomercial type Christianity. But I really like him. Is it Joel Osteen?
Oh, I know who that is. Yeah. I haven't really listened to him much though.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
Okay, well, we are getting the single that we only have 1 minute left, so we are going to wrap things up. Thank you again for joining us, and thank you for joining us, Yamani,
yes,
today.
Yes, I'm happy to be here. Thank you guys for inviting me.
And thank you again, Jill, for coming through.
Yeah, with anytime. Your cool questions. Anytime. Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Thought provoking.
And so this is Let's Talk About God. This is Bear signing off.
This is Jill signing off.
This is Imani signing off.
Thank you very much. And goodbye.
Bye.
For the final segment of the week, we again bring you 15 Minutes of Fame with in-house musician Joe Chavitz. EP Radio is made by Savannah Rowe, Fiona McMurray, Elise Chauvel, and Isabel Gigi. That's me. Our theme music is made by Joe Chavez and Oliver Henry of Chateau Russe. Special thanks to Safia Benyaya, Kevin Four, Jürgen Hecker, Hannah Wesley, and Levi Blanc. That's all for EP Radio. Tune in on Monday for more, and have a great weekend. Take care.